Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, the world's bird population is facing a lot of threats, and our next guest is going to talk with us about Audubon's conservation efforts in that area. John Roden, our guest today, he is back with us. He's the Senior Director of Bird Friendly Communities. It's an effort to provide important habitat for native birds. We'll also take a look at two new Audubon guidebooks, one for birds and one for trees. So, is your community part of the Bird Friendly program? What questions do you have about Audubon's other initiatives? Join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. John Roden, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Hey, Larry. It's great to be with you again.
You were with us, it was a few years ago, to talk about the Bird Friendly Communities Project, and probably a good idea to remind everybody what it is all about.
Sure. So the Bird Friendly Communities strategy is one of Audubon's five conservation priorities across the country, and we really seek to provide birds with food, shelter, safe passage, and places to raise their young in the communities that we share with them. And understanding that if we are making our communities more friendly for birds by providing those things, we're also making them better for people, right? If we have clean air and clean water that birds will enjoy, those are also beneficial to us. If we have access to green spaces that birds can use that are filled with native plants that provide them with resources, again, we can benefit from that. And if we do things like reduce the amount of artificial light that we're broadcasting to the sky at night, which will not only help them navigate through their migratory journeys, but will also save energy and help us in the face of climate change. So there's a lot of ways that we can work to help birds that help people as well.
Sure. How do people get involved in this program?
Sure. Well, so Audubon, as you and your listeners may know, is a national organization that has a number of chapters in Wisconsin. There are a number of chapters, and we also have a center, the Schlitz Audubon Center in Milwaukee. If you can go to our website, audubon.org, you can get connected to your local chapter or visit the Schlitz Audubon Center and figure out how you can contribute or you can get involved with their work. On our national website as well, we do have a section that's devoted to bird-friendly communities that talks in broad terms about what our work does across the country. But again, to get connected to your local Audubon, you can find that information on our national website too.
Yeah. And what's involved with this program? Is it similar to something like Tree City USA programs?
Right. So at the national level, what we do is we're providing programs and ways for people to engage. We have a couple different programmatic areas that we focus on. So one is the promotion of native plants. And we talked about this a lot, I think, the last time I was here, Larry, how native plants are better for our native bird species. And I'm happy again to talk about that. But the great thing about the information we have on our website about that is that people can put their zip code into our native plants database, which will tell them what plants are native to their local area and what birds they will help, and also what their local Audubon is and where they can actually get native plants in their local area. So they can plug into it in that way. And then we also focus on what we call bird-friendly buildings, which helps birds navigate the built environment that we have, and that can be challenging both from the light perspective, which I already mentioned at night, but also glass. Glass can be very problematic for birds, and so ways that folks can understand and can help contribute to solutions in their communities around that. I will say as well that there is a program that is called Bird City Wisconsin that is managed just for the state of Wisconsin that is aligned with, I think, that Tree City model, right, where communities can actually get a designation as a Bird City Wisconsin city, and then they can get – there's a set of criteria that they'll fulfill, and that will then give them – they'll get a sign and a plaque, and they get – recognition of that. And I think that there's, to date, there's over 100 communities from very small to up to the size of Milwaukee in Wisconsin that have been designated up to this point. And that website, I believe, is birdcitywisconsin.org. So folks can tap into that. That is associated with Audubon, but it is a separate designation process, if you will.
And it is kind of fun to drive around the state and see the signs up publicizing the event, or the fact that this is a Bird City, Wisconsin community. So that's pretty cool. The United Nations issued a report on climate change this week. Not a very good report, for sure. How, in terms of the of effects of climate change, how's global warming affecting bird populations?
Well, it is affecting bird populations quite dramatically, and we understand, or we are really communicating about the fact that climate change is the number one threat to birds, bird populations across the globe. Certainly, moving through this century, if we don't get warming under control, there's a lot of risk that it poses to birds. In the IPCC report was really stark, but a couple years ago we released a report called Survival by Degrees, which looked at a number of bird species in North America and what the impacts of various warming scenarios would be on those populations. So we looked at a 1.5 degree, 2 degree, and 3 degree increase in temperatures. And what we found is that even at low carbon scenarios, well, at low carbon scenarios, we do much better. But at high carbon scenarios and high warming scenarios, 2/3 of North American bird species are at risk of extinction. So we really are working to think about how can we work across the landscape to limit the amount of warming that will occur over this century. And folks can go to our website under the climate tab and see what all that looks like and how they can contribute. But you know, the very simple message to your question is that birds are incredibly vulnerable to the effects of climate change, and we really do need to think about how we can combat that to help them, as well as obviously the humans that are on the planet too.
Yeah, I saw an article in the Washington Post recently about emperor penguins that are in immediate danger of extinction, or at least rapidly losing the whole population because of climate change. It's a very sad situation, for sure. By the way, as you listen in, as we talk with John Roden, you can join in, too, with your own comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Well, maybe you could talk about some of the specific solutions or whatnot that Audubon is working on in this area.
Sure. And so one thing that I'll mention is that, and your listeners may be familiar with this too, is that about 18 months ago, 2 years ago, there was a report that was put out by, led by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, but with a number of partners, including Audubon, American Bird Conservancy, which illustrated that over the past 50 years, from 1970 to 2020, that we've lost about 3 billion birds in North America. So just meaning that the number of birds that existed, individual birds, has decreased by 3 billion over that time period, which is about a third of the species or a third of the individuals that we had. So there's a number of ways that we have proposed that people can take simple steps to help birds in their communities. So one of them is about making windows safer for birds and making your whatever spaces you have access to safer for birds as well. So you can birds don't perceive glass as a barrier and see it as either a passageway or the reflections in the glass as habitat that they may fly toward. And so actually making those windows visible to birds will help protect them from collisions, which are a very direct cause of mortality for birds across North America. And as well as light, I mentioned, so turning off lights, dimming lights at night so that that does not, those lights are not broadcast into the sky. Birds that are migrating use the moon and stars to navigate by, and so they have a very, they're tuned to light. And so large amounts of artificial light at night can be problematic for them. So both of those solutions can, will help birds, but also can contribute to the climate issue, right? Because if you reduce your lights, you're reducing your energy usage, that can help mitigate at least some of the challenges that that humans are contributing to around climate change. And as well, there's certain, there can be certain solutions around glass that actually reduce the amount of energy that that is required to heat and cool those spaces. And so there's some solutions that will help birds, but also can contribute to our climate change impacts as well.
Nina in Appleton, what's on your mind?
Thank you for having me. I just, it was a fluke that I got on here. Last year, it has to do with birds. I was very distraught after hearing a man call in and talk about how much he loves orioles and that to attract them, instead of buying jam or jelly, which is grape jelly, which I guess was running out on the shelves, he was telling people across the land to feed them jello. They love it. It's sweet. It's cheap. And I was trying to get on the show to tell people, no, please don't do that, because the dyes in the jello build up in the bird and that can kill them. I mean, I was just very distraught because I love orioles, and I know he was just trying to do something good, but people forget that their bodies are only ounces and they can't handle the amount of dyes and pigments that we put in our food.
Well, Nina, thanks for calling. John, a quick comment on that?
Sure. I thank you, Nina, and thank you for your love and interest in orioles. Yeah, I would agree that that is not a good food source for them. And, you know, one of the things that we recommend in our native plants program is that people can actually put plants in that support our native bird species, including orioles. Like if you put plants in that are native to the area that are providing nectar, those orioles and other nectar feeders like hummingbirds will really take advantage of that. And so that would be one thing I would add to that as well, that you can do things that will help create natural solutions that will support the birds in your local area too.
Nina, thank you so much. And Doug in Mount Horeb, we'll get to you. But first, we need to take a quick look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. John Roden, our guest today, Senior Director of Bird Friendly Communities at Audubon. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks for spending some of your day with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about efforts to protect birds and their habitats. And our guest is John Roden, John, Senior Director of Bird Friendly Communities at Audubon. So as we visit with him, what questions do you have maybe about bringing bird friendly areas to your community? Questions about Audubon's programs, other programs as well. We'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Doug in Mount Horeb, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, great program. We got a notice from the Audubon Society in our email that there is a bird disease that's going around, and people should take down their bird feeders if you notice any characteristics in the birds, like crusty eyes or something obvious like birds dying under your feeders. And we live kind of out in the boonies southwest of Madison, southwest of Mount Horeb, and we did notice several birds that had crusty eyes, and for the first time ever, we've had some songbirds die around our feeders, and we get a lot of birds out here. We feed about 25 pounds a week, and so we took the feeders down, and I'm just wondering if the guest could give any information about what that disease might be and what folks should do in the fall about putting feeders back up before the birds leave. Is that a good idea, or are we not supposed to put them back up?
Doug, thank you. John, what do you think?
Yeah, this is a really interesting question and subject area. So just to expand on that, and thank you, Doug, that was a great synopsis of and you know, I'm sorry that you're seeing the effects up there in Wisconsin. It started earlier this, probably late spring or summer, that people started seeing birds, particularly juveniles, even nestlings that were fledging, that did have crusty eyes and were lethargic, and some of them were dying. It's been principally in the sort of mid-Atlantic states and then has expanded somewhat up into the Northeast and over toward the Great Lakes. And it's not exactly clear what is going on, if there's a pathogen involved, if it's a disease process, a virus. There, the cicadas were a potential culprit at one point. I don't think that that has played out. And there's been a number of state wildlife agencies that have been involved in tracking and trying to understand what is going on with this, with what's going on with the birds. And there have been recommendations that people don't put up feeders or pull down their feeders, because what that can do, right, is concentrate birds in a particular area. And if there is something that's contagious, that could then contribute to the spread. During the summer, when resources are abundant, that's not really, that shouldn't be too problematic if there's not feeders, because birds will be able to find the food and resources that they need. But we haven't been, with an abundance of caution, we've been suggesting that. But again, state wildlife agencies may be recommending that, or they may not. And we kind of defer to what's going on in those areas. But I think that Doug brings up a good point, that as we move into the fall and in the winter, if the disease or the processes are still going on and we haven't identified what's happening, there, people may think about putting the feeders back up. And that, because those resources would be important during, you know, leading up to migration and during the colder months, particularly in areas where there is cold weather. So what I would suggest is that keep an eye on the information that's coming out from state wildlife agencies, and Audubon acts as a conduit. We share that information both through our national platforms and through local platforms to understand that, and to share that information. One thing that I would say, that it drives home the point that regardless of these sorts of situations, keeping your bird feeders very clean is really critical. Because one thing, if you're thinking about providing resources for birds through a feeder, you are concentrating birds sort of unnaturally in an area, right? They don't normally flock to one particular spot to feed, and there can be, then disease can be passed between them, particularly if the food gets soiled, it gets wet, there's mold or there's feces or anything like that. So please, for folks that do have feeders, keep them clean. And I would think that for the warmest months, we can probably take down the feeders, try to understand what's going on, and then think about, as we move into the fall and winter, if we have a better handle on what's actually going on with this disease or whatever the syndrome is that's causing this, that we would have some better and more focused information on what to do at that time.
And just to add to John's comments, Doug, you may or you should probably call your local DNR office. Mm-hmm. The Madison office, probably, or go online and report your location and where you saw where the birds were, because I think they're trying to track potential hot spots that may develop in Wisconsin. So they're looking for a citizen science here, citizen input. So please do contact your local DNR office and let them know about, if you haven't already, what you've seen and what's happened. They may even want to take a look at if there are some dead birds out there, they may want to be taking a look at those birds. So that's just something I'd add. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Audubon has been publishing guides for a very long time, John, and there are a couple of wonderful new ones out. I've got both of them in front of me right now. They're both great books. Tell us about Birds of North America first.
Sure. Yeah, I have both of the issues or the copies in front of me too. So, yes, we have been publishing guides for a long time, and earlier this year we published the new Birds of North America Field Guide. You know, what we really are trying to do is looking to inspire people to enjoy birds, and then of course protect them and the places that they need, like the communities we share with them. So, this was our first major update to the field guide since the 1990s, and we really did want to emphasize the connection between birds and also the threats that they face, including climate change. So one of the big newest features of this field guide is conservation status information for species. So people can actually see when they're reading about the birds, when they're learning about them, when they're learning how to identify them. They can also learn about what their conservation challenges are and how they can then contribute to that. So it's really trying to move forward into, yes, we want people to appreciate birds, but we also want them to join us in helping to protect them. And that's one of the things that this guide does as well.
Yeah, and with great color photography of the birds in a variety of positions. So if you're trying to identify one, there's, I think, some good opportunities to do that through the book.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a great addition to identification. Larry, you can vouch for this. It's a very large book, though.
Yes, it is.
So you may want to take it out in the field with you, but we also obviously have, well, not obviously, but we do have an app that people can download to their smartphones for free that will help them do identification as well. And this might be more of a reference that they might want to refer to either before or after they're going out, because it is a pretty hefty book.
It's like 900 pages or thereabouts, about 900 pages, and really nice paper quality and, of course, outstanding photography and print, and a way to kind of figure out where you need to look in the book to find a particular type of bird, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's where can readers find it?
So you can purchase it online. You can find it at your local bookseller. I would just encourage people to search for the National Audubon Society Birds of North America, and they can find it hopefully at a local bookseller.
Yeah, it's a dandy. Rod in Mineral Point has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Rod. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was just curious, with all the solar farms starting to pop up around the state and other parts of the country with the loss of coal-fired and otherwise power-generating stations. I have read a few articles that indicate that in some cases they are detrimental to birds, but I haven't seen a whole lot on it. I'm just wondering if they've heard anything or have any information.
Yeah, so in general, so we organizationally, we do support the promotion and the use of renewable sources of energy that can help, again, in the face of climate change. Solar farms need to be properly sited, and they need to actually think about their environmental impact and their footprint to help with all wildlife, birds and other wildlife, to be compatible with them. And one of the things that we do promote is actually not having kind of a scorched earth policy around the solar farms, but actually doing plantings. And there's a number of solar arrays that use native plants, plant them deliberately in are in and around the solar array, and that can be really beneficial to not only birds but pollinators and insects that birds rely on. So those thinking about the habitat that the solar arrays sit in is important. And if you're just if you're taking a a patch of land and you're denuding it and then putting solar panels on it, actually doing something to build up that habitat to support wildlife beyond the panels is an important thing to do.
Rod, thanks a lot. Just to take that to a different area, wind farms. I know there has been some controversy regarding wind farms. What's your position on those?
Yeah, again, renewable sources of energy are things that we are promoting. They just need to be sited correctly, and they needed to actually we need to understand what those impacts are, and those change over time, right, based on the size of the turbines, based on the speed of rotation, all of that. And there definitely are challenges there, but by being deliberate about how we're siting them and how we're actually designing those, thinking about the way that birds and bats actually are, there's some research that shows how problematic they can be for bats as well. Really thinking deliberately about how they're sited and how they're operating can help reduce the impacts that those have on bird and bat populations.
Manny in Milwaukee emailed to ask, you mentioned protecting birds from windows, and Manny's wondering, well, what specifically can he do to put on his windows to stop them from crashing into them?
Sure, that's a great question. Thanks, Manny, for asking that. So the problem is that birds just, they don't perceive glass. Glass is clear. They don't perceive it as a barrier, and that's not really different from humans. We don't perceive it as a barrier. We just use the cues of the frame or the mullions, whatever, to indicate that. So what you need to do is just make the window appear as a barrier so that they can see that there is something there. And it doesn't need to be high tech. People can use things like put tempura paint on their windows. There are commercial solutions like Feather Friendly, which is a tape that you can apply to your window, and it once you pull the tape off, it leaves small dots, which are enough to indicate that there's a barrier there. One thing that's really important is thinking about the spacing of whatever indications you have that it is glass, because birds are quite small in many cases and will see small passageways or small openings as passageways. And so we generally propose that people don't put their if they put dots or lines or whatever, that they're no more than 2 inches apart vertically and horizontally, and that will help protect birds down to the smallest ones like ruby-throated hummingbirds that can be found in Wisconsin, right? So that's really that's the key. I think we've probably all seen like large panes of glass that have a single small hawk silhouette in the middle, and that solution. Birds will not see that as a barrier, and they won't be fooled by thinking that there's a hawk there. So just thinking about the spacing of what you're doing is really important.
I want to turn to your other book. We talked a bit about Birds of North America, the new book from revised edition from the National Audubon Society. There's another one called Trees of North America, and it's a fabulous book as well. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so similarly to the Birds of North America, this was an update to, we published these guides before, and this is an update since our first update, I think, since the 90s. Again, beautiful photography showing the ranges of these species. And similar to the Birds of North America, one thing that a piece of information we included is the conservation status. And we do understand, obviously, that trees are vulnerable to various threats, including climate change. And so this actually identifies what the status is of the species and what may be contributing to that. And so people can, again, understand. We just really want people to continue to think about and incorporate conservation into their thinking as they're learning about these organisms, as they're learning to appreciate them and identify them, and how we can share our habitat and our areas and our communities with them without negatively impacting them is really the message we want to convey.
Yeah, it's another dandy book, and I'm glad I've got both the Birds of North America and the Trees of North America. Brian in Iola emailed that we shouldn't be forgetting Doug Tallamy's book, Nature's Best Hope, the homegrown national park. I talked with Doug about this last month, and the Nature's Best Hope, the trees of North America, kind of fits right in with what Doug talks about a bit.
Absolutely, and thank you for bringing up Doug. You know, he's a friend of mine, and he is an amazing human and has done so much to raise awareness about the importance of native plants, about the connections between native plants and the insects that rely on them, and then the birds that rely on those insects as well as those plants. And he's really a superstar in this area. And so I definitely, that's a great book. Bringing Nature Home is a great book. Certainly Doug has contributed mightily to this, to the information that we understand about this, and help share that really broadly. Yeah, I totally endorse that.
Are both the trees book and the birds book available only through, how again are they available to people?
So you can order them online. So I would search for National Audubon Society Trees of North America or Birds of North America, but they are available at local booksellers too. So I would probably start there, just contacting local booksellers and see if they carry them. And if not, maybe they can order them for you.
Just on another topic, Kenneth in Janesville called to say he's concerned about cities and counties' weed ordinances. They cut down plants that provide food and protection along roads and so forth, and wondering what can be done about that.
That is a great question, and that is something that we are focusing on at the national level at Audubon, and at the local level too, that actually through executive or legislative action, promoting the use of native plants or changing ordinances or regulations so that you're not actually focusing on the weediness, but the benefit of those native plants to wildlife and to our communities. And so you can go to our website and look at the Bird Friendly Communities tab, and there's information about the passing of, again, legislative or executive action, all the way down to the homeowners level, because we know that it can operate down to that very local level, homeowners association level, to change those kinds of regulations so that it can make it more beneficial for our native plant species to thrive.
And I just wanted to mention, we also have a blog post from Doug Tallamy's show. It's a really nice post. If you can go to our website, ideas@wpr.org/Larry, you're going to find that blog post. So important as well. And Marcus in Milwaukee, do you have a quick question?
Hi. So, Larry, in the last, I'd say about 3.5-4 weeks, I've seen at least 5 dead hawks along the side of the highways in the Milwaukee, Waukesha County area. And I'm just wondering if there's something that's going on that's causing hawks to either crash into barriers, or if there's something that's coming up from the viruses with the songbirds, that perhaps from predation on the songbirds, they're getting sick. And I just want to get this out there, because that's more hawks dead than I've seen actually flying in that same time period.
Hmm. John, what do you think?
Yeah, that's disturbing. I haven't heard of any connections between the what's going on with songbirds at feeders and those disease processes and any raptors that might be feeding on them. So I don't have any information on that potential connection. That is problematic. I mean, hawks are hit along roadways, but if you, I assume that you probably have spent time or this is not a newly traveled road, and so that is problematic. That's another thing that you might just connect with DNR about. I think that if you're ever seeing things that may be unusual with regard to wildlife in your local area, sharing that information is probably worthwhile, because that we may be able to pick up on trends and help mitigate them, or at least understand what might be going on.
In the last 30 seconds, when it comes to helping bird, what's the most important thing we can do?
Well, I would say one thing we haven't mentioned is keeping cats indoors. And that's something that is, we, through the 3 Billion Birds report, one of the simple things that people can do is keep their cats indoors, because we know that evidence indicates that the number one actually direct cause of mortality are loose and feral cats. So that would be one thing that I would say that people can do that would really help birds in their local area.
John, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. I love the Trees of North America and the Birds of North America books, and I hope we have a chance to visit again. Thank you so much. John Roden, Senior Director of Bird Friendly Communities at Audubon. Great to have him with us, and you'll have him back, and we'll talk again. Speaking of coming back, John Freiberger's back tomorrow to talk about stucco and other masonry exteriors, and he'll take your home improvement questions. Thank you so much for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.